Hey, Giant fans, welcome to the Giant Insider podcast. My name is Jerry Foley. I'm the senior editor of the Giant Insider newspaper, and with me, as always, is the beat writer and the heart of Giants Nation. Nobody beats the biz, Chris Bisignano, and we are so happy to have back a friend of the podcast. And I feel like Pat Summerall from our nation's capital, Rick Saratella, baby. He's back. What's up, Rick?
Back at it again, checking in from the D.C., nation's capital here. So, man, I don't know how many years we've been doing this, but definitely one of my favorite annual traditions, and looking forward to the interaction. I love the fact that we're live this year, fellas. Buckle up. There we go.
Stepped it up, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing that we're talking draft again, Rick, Jerry? I mean, it's man, time flies. And here we are with Rick. It seems like we were on with Rick yesterday, man. And here we are talking draft again.
It's a month away.
It's incredible. It's a month away, right?
Crazy.
But Rick, thanks for jumping on again, man. We love having you, man. We love your expertise, so-called expertise. I'm going to call it expertise. You know, yeah,
Some people may.
I am. I love your the way you grind, the way you study these kids, and what you put on paper and your draft Bible and whatever, you know, whatever. I know you're coming out. We'll get into it later, what you're coming out with this year and all that stuff. And
yeah.
But look, here's the facts, Rick. This is no secret anymore. The Giants are going to be looking to get a quarterback, okay? And they could spin it all they want with Daniel and all that stuff, and we believe in him and all that. But the fact is that Joe and Dave's want to get a quarterback here. So we'll get into that position first. I guess, Rick, you know what? I think it's pretty safe to say Caleb Williams is going to the Bears, okay? So let's get into the next group of Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy, who might be the most talked about man on the earth right about now. J.J. McCarthy, a kid that people about a month and a half ago had maybe second round, late first, to now, Rick, we're seeing what's going on with him. Where he might even go third, second, fourth, who moves up. So let's get into it, Rick. Out of those three guys, okay, let's go. Well, let's do the hot one first. J.J. McCarthy. Talk about him, Rick. What do you see from him? And is he a top four draft choice type talent?
Well, after Caleb Williams, I don't think any of these quarterbacks are truly a first round grade for me. But I think that you have all these quarterback needy teams, right? And quarterback win ball games, right? It's the reason why a team like San Francisco can afford to pay a $16 million running back because they have a quarterback on a rookie contract. Everybody loves that formula. You saw 16, 17 quarterbacks change teams that started from a year ago. So it's a supply and demand trickle down effect. For me, out of that bunch that you mentioned, I'll go J.J. McCarthy. Personally, okay, and you say, well, why? Well, I like his moxie. I like his decision-making. I think that, you know, it's great for not carrying the team on his back, but as a run-oriented offense. And when he was asked to make the throws, he was able to squeeze it into tight windows. I know there's concerns about arm strength and his frame.
Breaking up a little bit, Rick.
Being a
Rick's
coach
on location in a hotel. Sorry, Rick. You broke up a little bit. Frame. Start. Pick up with frame. Now, Rick.
Well, yeah. So there's concerns about his arm strength and frame, right? Okay. But I don't think he gets enough credit for being like a coach on the field and an extension of Jim Harbaugh. Like, if you remember the controversy and the scandal Michigan program, like, this guy didn't skip a beat. And Jim Harbaugh wasn't there, and McCarthy carried on. And if you remember, if you go back to McNamara, who was a highly touted recruit, like, McCarthy came in and took the job away. And I think the big thing when you're evaluating these quarterbacks, like, we're not in those team meetings. We're not getting the medicals that the NFL teams are getting. But if you're just basing it purely on a talent evaluation out of the quarterbacks that you mentioned, give me J.J. McCarthy. One, because he can make all the throws. Two, I do think he's a system quarterback. Like, if you want to win ball games, like Kirk Cousins can win ball games, right? Is J.J. McCarthy going to take you to the Super Bowl? I think the problem I have is, like, there's no elite traits. What's the elite trait? If it's just leadership, well, that's not the elite trait that I want a starting quarterback to have. And I think if you're the Giants, like, how much of an upgrade is J.J. McCarthy over Daniel Jones? I mean, like, is it the same player? Because McCarthy extends plays. He can move the chains with his feet when needed, kind of like can make all the throws, doesn't have the greatest arm strength. Are you truly making an upgrade, or are you just making a change for the sake of change? And I think that's the issue with this year's quarterback class. Like, all these quarterbacks come with major warts, but we're putting them up on a pedestal because of how many quarterbacks or how many teams need a quarterback. I just don't know, like, if any of these guys after Caleb Williams is truly an upgrade over Daniel Jones. And we could talk about Daniel Jones. To me, it's the second coming of David Brown. And, you know, like, we're 5 years into the process, and he's a subpar 500 quarterback, and we're still wondering, like, is Daniel Jones the guy? Probably not at this stage of the game. But what's the other option? Trade up for a guy that might not be better. You blew it. Daniel Jones, two guys that have durability issues. I agree. The quarterback position needs to be addressed. But do you want the third or fourth or fifth best quarterback in this year's draft? I don't think you want to go that route. And so we'll see. I just don't think the Giants have the draft equity like the Vikings, some of these other teams that can move up and give up maybe more first-round picks. I don't know if I see a formula that works here for the Giants.
So you're saying you like J.J. McCarthy second behind Caleb Williams. Rick?
He's frozen. Hotel internet, guys. He's frozen. I think he said yes, but we'll see. Rick, you there? Rick, log back in. Looks like he's having some issues. He's frozen now.
Until Rick comes back, I found it interesting. He said, Rick, you there?
There he is.
Rick.
Yeah, you're back now?
Yeah. Okay. So you like J.J. McCarthy second best behind Caleb Williams?
From a talent perspective, yes, absolutely.
One thing I like about J.J. McCarthy, tell me what you think about this, watching him over the years, watching him recently, watching some tape of him, it seems like to me he does look at that second and third read, especially when he's on the move. Like, he's looking upfield, Rick. He's looking downfield. He's looking to make a play before he wants to take off with his athleticism. Tell me what you think about that. When I look at J.J., I know you said some things about J.J., but one thing you have to say, that he did come up big for them in the big games, right? Ohio State games, championship game. Two, when he gets out of that pocket a little bit, he's looking to make plays down the field still. Mm-hmm. Rick, tell me if and he seems to look for that second and third read before he takes off, where we all know with Daniel at times he's got that one read and either he'll throw to it or he'll take off. What do you think about that, Rick?
No, I want to be very clear. J.J., I would rather roll the dice and go with the J.J. McCarthy. The price that you have to pay to acquire J.J. McCarthy is probably you're going to give up at least this year's first-round pick and probably two future first-round picks if you really want J.J. McCarthy.
From 6 to 4, though, you think? Is it two?
No, I think you have to go up to 2 or 3. Oh, okay. You know, you got to go to 3, right? Because I believe Jaden Daniels will be number 2.
Okay.
So you got to go now to number 3, which you have to outdo the Vikings. Now the Vikings have what, 10 and 22?
11. I think it's 11 and 23. Yeah.
11 and 23. So you got to present a package that's better than that. So now you got to give up 6. And then you've got to give up maybe 40, but you definitely got to give up 2025 and 2026 first round picks. So if you want to mortgage the future on J.J. McCarthy, which I agree with the chat room. Yeah, he's an upgrade. Is he a significant upgrade? I don't know how much of a significant upgrade he is, but yeah. Do you want to pay three first-round picks and more to acquire J.J. McCarthy? Or if you're looking at it like from a Brian Daboll and Joe Shane perspective, like we got to win now. This is year three. They might just have to like lay in the bed they made, with which is Daniel Jones, which I never agreed with, giving him all that money. But this is the bed they made, and now they've got to lay in it, because if you want to go up and get that future quarterback, you're probably giving up three first-round picks and more. Do you guys want to do that?
Well, I don't know if that's what's going to – we'll see. Well, as far as Daniel –
you got to give up more than what the Vikings are willing to give, and the Vikings are willing to give up the ranch. They're going to give two first-round picks this year and a first-round pick next year. So you've got to top that, guys.
The only, yeah, no, right? I get that. The only thing I'm thinking that's a little different is I just think that sixth pick is so much more valuable than 11 and 25. I mean, because then, again, you know, you're talking about Marvin Harrison Jr. You're talking about another quarterback maybe. Look, I don't know. I always said I would trade down. If the Vikings wanted to trade up with me and I wasn't getting my quarterback, I would trade down. But on the stipulation that there's more than that added to it. So I just think the sixth pick for a team like Arizona or the Patriots, there's a lot of capital there. That's all. But I get future first rounders would totally be. Okay. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, let's not get into this, how much we're going to swap draft picks and stuff like that. Let's stick with the talent of these kids. Because for all we know, sure, Washington could turn around and take a J.J. McCarthy. We really don't know. Besides Caleb Williams, we really don't know how these teams have these kids graded out, right? You hear rumors. You hear that. But for all we know, Washington could stun people. Adam Peters and Dan Quinn and Cliff Kingsbury could turn around and go, you know what? I like J.J. We got a whole month of this process still. They could turn around and say, you know what? They take J.J. McCarthy at number two. Now, that throws a whole wrinkle in everything. Now, how do these teams have Jaden Daniels graded out? Does New England want Jaden Daniels? Now, are they looking to move out because they don't have Jaden Daniels graded a third-round pick, three overall, right? And then Arizona's going to be looking because of the Vikes. Now, are the Vikes hot on J.J. McCarthy, and they have other kids not graded out as well? That's the beauty of this thing. So let's just stick to the talent as far as – so you have J.J. McCarthy – second best, Rick, right now, which a lot of people look at. When you hear what's going on, a lot of people feeling like that, Rick. That's why we can't just discount what Washington's going to do. You know, as far as trade packages or Giants move up to four, we don't know, because a lot of people are feeling like you, Rick, where JJ is the second best behind Caleb, because Caleb's going to Chicago. We know that. Okay. So,
yeah.
Hey, a lot of people like JJ number two. So, how about Jaden Daniels? Okay, if he asks for three or Drake May, who do you like better between those two?
Well, again, for the record, I just want to be clear that Michael Penix would be number three for me. But wow, if you talk about the quarterbacks, Jaden Daniels and Drake May, it's a tough one for me, and I'll take them one at a time. Like, so Jaden Daniels, to me, is a great deep ball thrower, man. Oh, my God, amazing. Doesn't do as much for me in the short to intermediate game, which is where I feel like the NFL is won. Okay. The biggest problem I have with Jaden Daniels is this man will never last an entire season. With his running style and the hits that he takes, I mean, I've seen him absorb hits from college boys that, you know what, they're just not going to play at the same speed. You know, the NFL are men. And the hits this guy's a train wreck waiting to unfold. And I'll use the Carson Wentz analogy. Like, again, we're not sitting down with these guys and talking to them. Like, I spoke to Carson Wentz at the combine, and this guy was like thick-headed. He didn't want to hear nothing from nobody, and he didn't want to hear about like how his running style was a hindrance. And if you go back at North Dakota State, his last 2 years, every injury he had in the NFL, it's because he didn't know how to slide. He didn't know how to absorb a hit, roll with the hit. I mean, Jaden Daniels exposes himself to mega hits. And I think that kind of supersedes kind of like Kyler Murray is a great talent. But when, you know, you can't make the club in a tub and you're, you know, you can't stay healthy, going to be a major problem. So for me, Jaden Daniels, I think has the upside. Like when you talk about if it actually all clicks together, right? And that's what the draft, if, like he's got the most upside, I think, after Caleb Williams, out of all those guys you mentioned, like his upside is greater than J.J. McCarthy. But J.J. McCarthy's floor is higher. And Daniels has a lot to learn. I don't know, because I haven't sat down with the young man and spoken to him, if he's like willing to adapt or change his play style or understands that or gets it. But like when you're playing 18 plus games in the playoffs, 20 games, and you run around like a rooster with his head cut off, man, that's bad news for me. So with that being said, I can transition into Drake May, or would you like to follow up there?
No, go ahead, Rick. Yeah, he asked about both. Go ahead, buddy. Jump it.
With Drake May, like I think the allure with Drake May is like he can make all the throws. He's very impressive with the arm velocity, and he can make like the rare throws that some of these other guys can't. And I think, you know, that's what you see and you fall in love and you say, man, I really want this guy throwing off his back foot like laser darts. And you fall in love with that, kind of like Justin Fields had those kind of throws on Ohio State. But like with May, the thing that bothers me with May is like he's so up and down. He's a roller coaster ride. And for the last 2 years, I look at his opponents, the top 25 competition. I'm always like, oh, man, this is a statement game for Drake May. This is really an opportunity for him to make a statement. And like anytime he plays a good team, he shits the bed. And like, you know, then you see him make like easy throws. He makes it look difficult at times. And so like the consistency for me of a Drake May probably puts him fifth on my board, right? Because I'm a Caleb Williams, J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix three guy. I'd go Jaden Daniels four and Drake May five. And I think like, you know, you don't hear a lot of this because everything is like the media draft coverage is such a groupthink box mentality. Like somebody says something and then everybody says the same thing and over and over and over again. But like Michael Penix to me, and you want to talk about a winner. I mean, this guy wins. This guy makes all the throws. He's a traditional pocket passer type. The mechanics are a little wonky. I get it. Lefty thrower. People have a problem with that. I don't know. I've spoken to people in the league that prefer Michael Penix over Drake May. I wonder how many other teams think that. But from what I'm hearing, like Penix is going to be around two, and Bo Nix could even fall to day three. But I'll tell you what, guys. If Penix is there at 40 for the Giants, I'd be pounding the table. I'd be ecstatic about it. I think they have to really consider that at 40. And if they're not going to take a quarterback at 40 and Penix and Nix are both on the board, well, I think they only have like six draft picks. So I think at that point, if you decided you don't like those guys and they're both sitting there on the board at 40, I think that's where you trade back and maybe pick up some additional draft picks.
Rick, I think the issue with Penix, and it's exactly what Tom says, is Neal is your blindside right tackle. I know they just signed Luminor as well, but I think that's more the issue. When Giant fans talk about Penix, aside from the injuries, that's the issue. My question to you was going to be, what's your pro comp for Drake May?
Drake May. That's a good question. I haven't really comped him. He's
Sam Howell.
No, well, he's a bigger Sam Howell. He's a more accurate Desmond Ridder.
More accurate Desmond Ridder. Wow.
More okay, accurate cool. Desmond Ridder.
Not very exciting.
Well, I don't think, Nicola,
it's 47.
Franchise quarterback. I don't see any of these guys as a franchise quarterback, quite frankly. I think, and I like McCarthy. I just think there's a ceiling there, right? There's a ceiling. Like, you can win ball games with JJ McCarthy. You know, I don't know how far he's going to take you. You got to have a great supporting cast. You've got to have that offensive line. You've got to have that running back by committee like they had in Michigan. But there's a reason why they didn't lean on him. And I'm a big JJ McCarthy fan, and I'll take JJ McCarthy over Daniel Jones 10 out of 10 times. I just don't want to give up three future first round picks and more. And I know we're going to shelf that conversation, but you know, that's part of the team building process. And you look at year three, this team has no blue chip talent. Like, where's the blue chip talent? There's maybe like three guys you can consider foundational building blocks. Other than that, like, you've got to add talent. And I'll say another thing.
Hang on, Rick, lead in. We'll lead in after the commercial with this. Guys, we're going to take a break. We're going to be right back with Rick Saratelli. You're listening to the Giant Insider Podcast. Hang on 1 second. And we're back. Folks, listen to the Giant Insider Podcast with Jerry Foley and Chris Nobody Eats the Biz Ignano, and our special guest, Rick Saratella. Go ahead, bud.
No, Anthony Paidan in the chat room. Did I hear Harbaugh? I did hear Harbaugh, and he talked about the offensive line and how teams are built from the inside out. And so, you know, this is where I think it's intriguing, because say the Chargers do go offensive line and the Cardinals trade down for a quarterback, the ultimate scenario for me is the Giants get Marvin Harrison Jr. So would you rather have Daniel Jones and Marvin Harrison Jr.?
Yeah.
Or JJ McCarthy, and then wait until the third round, what is it, number 70, to pick again? And so, you know, what's also interesting is I had to go back and look, like, when Marvin Harrison Sr. came into the league with the Colts, you know who the starting quarterback was? Captain Comeback himself, Jim Harbaugh. And so I wonder, you know, how much of that influences it now. Another thing I can tell you is, like, Marvin Harrison Sr., they don't have an agent now, and he has been a hell to deal with, is my understanding. It has not been a pleasure to deal with the camp of Marvin Harrison. But I think if you can add a blue chip prospect, that moves the needle, and that's what the Giants need.
It's funny, Rick, because I put on Twitter the other day, I said, a month ago, 2 months ago, it would be like talking about Marvin Harrison dropping to the Giants. Everybody would be like, that's impossible. It's not going to happen. Well, guess what? Now it might happen. This is how quickly it changes. And speaking of the Harrison camp, you said it might be difficult to deal with. I hear the same thing about Caleb Williams. I heard he has a real helicopter dad.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's not going to be the Giants' problem, but I have heard about his dad as a real – helicopter dad, you know, and he's going to be a problem for the Bears, but that's their problem. So, but Rick, Shane came out, I think Joe came out yesterday, 2 days ago, said this is one of the best quarterback classes he's seen in a while. So he seems to be pretty high on this group. And what, just a quick question for you, Rick. Michael Penix, why isn't more teams talking about him in the top three or four?
Well, I think traditionally there has been a kind of a bias against left-handed quarterbacks. From the scouts I speak to, it's just like the mechanics. They say his upper body isn't connected with his lower body. I don't know if I necessarily see that. This guy throws lasers. He's extremely accurate, in my opinion. He can push the ball downfield. He's got great pocket poise. You know, you want to say he had three season-ending injuries at Indiana, okay, but he checked out fine at the combine. Yeah. From what I understand, he was cleared medically. So, it's an interesting case study. I don't know why the four quarterbacks that are being bandied about as top five picks are so far ahead of Michael Penix. I guess the college football playoff performance may have downgraded his stock, but if you watch this kid for the last 2 years, I mean, he's put some impressive throws down on film, and he's won a lot of ball games. So I don't understand why Michael Penix doesn't get talked about more. To me, I actually, like, some days maybe have him ahead of JJ McCarthy, quite frankly. So I'm a big believer in Michael Penix. I think he's going to outplay his draft the slot. I think he's going to outplay a lot of these quarterbacks that we're kind of putting up on a pedestal. And I don't see how Jaden Daniels survives an NFL regular season. And Drake May is just way too inconsistent for me to be an NFL long-term starting quarterback, in my opinion. Can they develop? Can they improve? Can coaching and scheme and fit maybe dictate the situation? I think that's what really makes or breaks quarterbacks. It's not the talent. It's the coaching. It's the system.
Yeah, sure.
It's the scheme, right?
Rick, maybe do you think it's the injury history of Penix that scares people?
I think it's a combination. I think it's the injury history. I think, you know, like we bring up lefty, the first thing you say is, oh, well, Evan Neal's the blindside protect. Well, how about we build if you have a franchise quarterback, why don't we rearrange our personnel around him then? We'll figure it out, right? Like, that's how I look at it. To me, Penix is the guy. And I'll tell you what, too. I think Denver, what are they saying, at 10, right around there?
12.
12? Maybe that's too rich for Michael Penix, but if I'm Sean Payton, man.
Nope, that's where I have him going. That's my stupid mock that I do every year that I got to do for the insider. That's where I have him going, and yep, yeah. So I don't think he's, like you said before, getting to 47. That's a dream. I don't think he's gotten that far. I mean, maybe, well, you know, strange things have happened, but a quarterback needy team in the teens, I think, would scoop him up. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, that whole Evan Neal, they would never draft him because Evan Neal's a blind. That's ridiculous. Okay, that will not hold up. If the Giants were hot on Michael Penix Jr., that would not hold up them from drafting Mike because Evan Neal's the right tackle. First of all, Evan Neal's on a short leash anyway. You might see Jermaine Illuminor in there by game two anyway. But that would not hold up the Giants. People got to stop. I know a lot of people. I see a lot of people on Twitter saying, "Oh, they'll never draft him because Neal's about that." That's ridiculous. So. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see where Penix goes, Rick, because, you know, you don't hear anybody talking about him in the top four. You know, you hear about him middle, late round, maybe second. Bo Nix, the same thing. Like you heard the other day, hey, maybe Sean Payton likes Bo Nix. He goes at 12. It all depends how you have these kids graded out, you know. So it'll be fascinating to see where these kids go, you know, no question about it. But, Rick, you know, if it doesn't work for Joe, if they don't get the quarterback, which is a good chance they might not, okay, in my opinion, they're going to go wide receiver for sure.
Yeah.
At six. They need a number one, okay? They need an X guy that is a difference maker. I look at these three kids. It's amazing, like we just talked about, that Marvin Harrison Jr. might actually fall to the Giants. It's possible now. A month and a half ago, it was get lost. It isn't happening. Now, yeah, it's possible. So when you look at Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, who had a great pro day today, from what I understand, and Rome Ndunze, who I love too. Let's talk about those three. Rick, I've been talking with Jerry, you know, on the podcast for the last few weeks, and I look at all three, Rick, and I would be surprised if one of them did not make an impact in his career in the NFL. I look at all three as – I hate to say can't miss, but I think they're sure draft picks, man. I love what they bring to the table. How do you see it? Let's do Marvin first, Rick. You know, let's talk about him. Do you have Marvin as the best receiver coming out?
I do. And I would say the wide receiver class is stronger than the quarterback class, to your point, Biz. But yeah, to me, Marvin Harrison, you know, we got enough dog ears in us to remember the father coming out of Syracuse. And to me, you know, Junior is a better pro prospect. So to me, that's my number one wide receiver prospect. And, you know, if he's a better rated prospect coming out of college than his yellow jacket wearing father, to me, that's a cornerstone piece that you can build around. And I think that, you know, losing a weapon such as a Saquon Barkley, like, that is dependent upon to move the chains, well, adding in Marvin Harrison would kind of offset that, if not surplus it, just because I think he is that kind of possession type, dependable wide receiver. Maybe didn't have to, like, take over games at Ohio State because that's not his game. But, man, this dude is reliable. He's a sharp route runner, football IQ. I like Marvin Harrison as the top overall complete package plug and play. Like, this is a guy that is probably going to go to the Pro Bowl as a rookie. Like, he's that good. And I do think there is a little bit of separation there. I'm not one of these guys where, like, hey, you could take any three of them. No, no, it's Marvin Harrison all day for me.
Rick, does it bother you he didn't join his pro day? He didn't do his pro day and the combine and all that stuff. Does it bother you at all?
You know, does it matter if it bothers me? I think I try to.
No, I'm like, just asking you. Does it bother you?
Well, so like, it's funny because I talked earlier in the show about perspective. So, like, as a scout, hell yeah, it bothers me, right? But then, like, you know, like Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison's attitude is not for me. But then I try to, like, remove myself from the scout perspective and look at it from a different perspective. And, like, what Caleb Williams did, for example, like, I know people and scouts especially were pissed off. Like, hey, this guy's not doing the medical. Like, the first guy in history is not going to do the medical. Like, what a bad precedent. And then, like, I thought about it. It's like, there's one team that's literally going to draft this dude. Like, if I'm looking at it, like, as an independent person, like, why should I share my medical records with 31 other teams? I get it. I don't necessarily agree with it. I don't appreciate that as a scout perspective, mm-hmm. but it's like, you know what? The kid's got a point there. Marvin Harrison, I'm okay with it. Like, we saw that with COVID, like during COVID, like Jamar Chase, Penei Sewell, there was a slew of guys that didn't work out. And in fact, I think you're going to see more of this in the future, years to come. If you have elite level tape, what do I need to participate in your prime time 40 yard dash nonsense or go work out in t-shirts and shorts at a pro day? Give me a break.
Yeah. He's meeting with teams, Rick. He's talking to coaches. Yeah, and when you're going to be a top five, when you're going top five in a draft, I got to be honest with you, it doesn't really bother me at all. You know where you're going. It's not going to hurt your draft stock. Okay.
No.
These guys, they all find out about you off the field, what kind of kid you are and stuff like that. You know, this is not going to be.
Now, I will say that 20 to 25 million NIL deal was a real thing that was on the table that they were considering, like, in early January.
That was wouldn't a real you? Thing.
Yeah.
Rick, wouldn't you? Think sure. about it. I'm sure he was. I'm sure the dad was telling him, hey, you know what I mean? I'm sure. It's tough to turn down that money, man. Go back another year to Ohio State. So, what are you going to do? It didn't really bother me that much. I know he's being labeled as a diva and all that stuff. But I guess guys like Malik Neighbors and Rome, those are guys you really – should work out in their pro days. They did, right? They are. One did already. I think Rome might be tomorrow. I'm not sure, Rick. When is their Washington's pro day? It might be tomorrow.
Well, I know I got my buddy texted me on the way driving down here to DC.
I Neighbors think it's today. Ran in, I think it's today too. Yeah.
Yeah. Neighbors ran in the 4.38 to 4.45 range with a 42-inch vert and a 10'9" broad jump. So he did everything that.
Remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, right? Like, he's the more explosive guy, can blow the top off of the defense. Like, even though they would be settling for the second best wide receiver in the draft, I think at number six, you got to pull the trigger, because if you're going to roll the dice with Daniel Jones, well, one of the biggest excuses that has been made for him, well, he doesn't have weapons. Well, get the man some weapons. Malik Neighbors is a weapon. He can blow the top off of defense. He's a wide receiver number one instantly the moment he steps onto the field. And so I have Neighbors slightly ahead of Odunze, who I like. Rome Odunze, man. I think he's big. He's fast. He's physical. He's vertical, right? And to me, like, that guy – and maybe with the rule changes too, with the return game, like, maybe Odunze gets a little bit of a bump up on some people's draft boards because he can do that also. But to me, like, Neighbors is maybe the reincarnation of Odell Beckham Jr., right? Like, that's the kind of upside he has. And I tell you what, man, his teammate Brian Thomas, I don't know what he ran, but, like, he might sneak into the first round as well. So
yeah.
LSU, I think, is right now. LSU would be the wide receiver you crown. Ohio State maybe giving them a run for the money. But those two schools, man, they just pump out these wide receivers.
Rick, it's amazing watching Malik Nabers and how many times he faced off-man coverage, 8 to 10 yards, and blowing right by the guy. Blowing right by the corner. And just – it was looking at him, how explosive he is incredible. So, say Marvin Harrison is gone. You're going with Nabers over Rome for the Giants?
I am. Six? Yeah, I am. I just think the dynamic playmaking ability for me is what the Giants, like, that's what the doctor ordered, right? Like, give me that guy, big time pedigree, proven track record, checked off all the boxes. Now, you know,
I didn't realize how big, honestly, Rick, I didn't realize how big he was until I saw him in his pro day today with no shirt on. I was like, man, this kid is jacked too. You know, man, he's built, man. He has it all, man. No question about it. Yeah, Jerry.
No, Rick, do you have a wide receiver as your deepest position or just like deepest in the first round?
You know, I would probably say offensive tackle is the deepest.
Okay.
Yeah. And then wide receiver. And I like the cornerback class on the defensive side. I think corners. And what a funny draft, because like I look at the top 10, like this is a top heavy draft on offense. And I look at the Falcons, I think, at number 8 as the first potential defensive player.
Yeah, right? I'm sure they're going to go defense, yeah.
Right? And so, like, you know, I don't know if I can find a home for a defensive player before that. And I don't know how many in the top half of the first round, quite frankly. Like, there might only be 2 or 3 defensive guys in the first 16 picks.
Rick, I agree with you. I had Dallas Turner going to Atlanta, and that was the first defensive player. Again, yeah. I'm never right, so that's not good for you. Yeah, but. Right.
So it's guaranteed to be wrong. But, you know, if you look at it, though, like trying to find a home for these defensive guys. And, like, to me, Jared Verse fits what Atlanta likes to do a little bit more. But I think Dallas Turner, like the testing man, it's hard not to take that guy, you know.
Rick, give me a wild card for the Giants at 6. They don't go wide receiver. They don't get their quarterback. Give me a wild card at 6.
Well, Joe Alt. I don't know if that's a wild card, but I think he's got to be in consideration, right?
No one's gonna be mad. I don't think people are gonna be too mad at that. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a wild card. I guess Brock Bowers would be a wild card.
That would be my wild card right there. Yep. Yeah.
Brock Bowers, you know, like, and I wouldn't be mad if he winded up in Jersey in a green uniform, right? Like maybe he goes to the Jets, but you know, the Giants clearly have a need at tight end. I will take the same stance as a year ago when I was on this show. You asked me about Darren Waller. I sensed some excitement. I said, guys, yeah, I expect absolutely nothing from Darren Waller. Anything that guy gives you is a bonus, and I feel the same exact way.
I specifically remember you saying there were still issues with him in Vegas, like nightlife type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the bottom line when it comes to Darren Waller is football is not a priority in his life.
He's proven that the last month.
So
well, he's got time to decide, guys. Come on, he's got time.
He's proven that, Rick, obviously, with his I don't know if I'm gonna retire or not. His one foot's out the door. So
is he gonna go make another hit? I mean, what I saw that YouTube music video. I mean, what a terrible song. I don't want to sidetrack, but man,
it's all part of the package, Rick. It's all part of the package.
That was pretty brutal, though.
Yeah. So, Rick, offensive line wise, Joe Alt is your number one tackle coming out.
I like Joe Alt. Yeah, I've always been an Alt believer. You know, just the size and fundamentals and. The movement, the footwork, I mean, experience. He's the real deal. I like Alt. You know, I like the Penn State kid, but he's been injured now. You know, I was at that Penn State pro day. He was limited. You know, I think he was limited at the combine, if I'm not mistaken. But I think Bishanu and Fuega from Oregon State are probably right there as the 2 and 3 off the board. I like J.C. Latham, right, in terms of the tackle. I mean, if you want to talk about the depth in this draft at the offensive tackle position, like J.C. Latham, I think this guy is a starting right tackle. He can maybe play right guard. He can maybe step in at left tackle and give you relief there if need be. But him and Fuega, Oregon State, Tyler Guyton, I was not as high on, okay? At the Senior Bowl, I didn't see it, man. I see what teams love the allure of that big lump of clay, and I think Dallas could possibly take him in the later first rounds. I do think he's a first-round talent, but I do think he's a step below. Like, I would rather have a guy like Jordan Morgan out of Arizona, who I would comp to Isaiah Wynn because of the arm length, but he can survive. Like, Jordan Morgan, man, this guy is really polished. Technically, he's a technician now, 32-inch arms and change. But to me, I saw him at the Senior Bowl, all he did was stonewall guys all week long. And then Amarius Mims, who had
Rick, hang on 1 second. Start with Mims after the break. Guys, you're listening to the Giant Insider Podcast. Our special guest, Rick Saratella. We'll be back right after this. Hang on 1 second. And we're back. Folks, listen to the Giant Insider Podcast with Jerry Foley and Chris. Nobody Eats the Biz, Biz Ignana, with our special guest, Rick Saratella. Go ahead, bud. Mims.
Well, two things. First of all, Dr. Mac, I didn't say I didn't like Darren Waller. I never said that. I just speak the facts, brother. What I said was
no. He said he's saying he. You know, no, I never liked Waller. He doesn't like.
Oh, you never liked him. Yeah, I just said, hey, he's on the back of a milk carton half the time. You can't find.
Oh no, no, Dr. Mac. I know Dr. Mac well. He's a very knowledgeable. He told me from day one. I remember him tweeting saying, "I don't want this guy." I remember that's what he.
But you know, like just the offensive tackle depth. Like I was at the UConn Pro Day. This kid from Yale was there, Kieran Amegabeji. Who's a top 75 talent on film. He's another one, had a season ending quad injury. He's going to work out on the third for NFL teams. And I'll tell you what, this kid from Kansas, Dominic Puny, I know everybody's projecting him as a guard. He played tackle at Kansas, man. He was a Senior Bowl stud. Later on in the draft, you got guys like Christian Jones out of Texas. I thought was pretty impressive. You know, there's incredible depth. I mean, even a guy like Walter Rouse out of Oklahoma who began at Stanford, this guy is really, really good. You could probably get him in the third or fourth round. Roger Rosengarten, who people love, and from Washington, like he's a little bit of a wild horse. But if you reel in, like he's aggressive now. Like he can overextend himself and get caught out of place. But like when you reel in some of that aggressiveness from Roger Rosengarten out of Washington, like – that's a guy you could get in the third or fourth round, could probably start at right tackle. And he's like number 14 on my big board and at the offensive tackle position. Like there's incredible depth at offensive tackle.
Rick, Jerry.
Yeah, I had a, God, geez, I'm losing my mind. You started talking about tackle and I'm going into a trance here. Go ahead, Chris. If you have another question, right. I had one, I lost it.
The Giants didn't draft a cornerback position.
Yeah.
And you, as you know, a lot of free agency dictates what you're going to do in the draft. They didn't address the cornerback position. I think they will in this draft. And I think it might be in the second round. Okay. That's some young kids, you know, you got some kids coming back, but I don't think they look at and say, okay, Cordell Flott or Nick, that's our guy. No, opposite of Tate Banks. No, it's going to be, I think, in the draft. They didn't address it in free agency. And so in the second round, I think it's a possibility, Rick, that they're going to go corner back. Okay. There's a couple, it looks like this class is pretty deep as far as corner goes, especially when you got my boy Cam Hart from Notre Dame. Down to like 9th or 10th or 7th or 8th. Not you particularly, Rick. I'm looking at how these guys have graded out. And I'm saying to myself, wow. Because I watched Cam the last 2 years and I watched him against big time competition and I seen him shut people down. Okay. So maybe it's his 4-5 speed, Rick, that kind of dropping him. But forget about Cam for now. Who do you have as some of your top corners? And while we're at it, since I'm a Notre Dame guy, you know, where do you have Cam? How do you have him graded out?
Well, you know, he's a 4'5" guy at 6'3", 202 pounds.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
And I'll tell you what, the coaching staff will not stop gushing about this kid in terms of leadership, coach on the field, first one in, last one out. Like, in terms of character and off the field, he's a coach's dream. And then you say, well, what the heck? He's a 6'3" corner, and, you know, he doesn't get any love on the mainstream media. I don't he's understand not. Why. I don't know.
Thank you, Paizan. Thank you. Because I'm with you. Because but, I tell you what, Rick, I'm the type of guy, okay, yeah, okay, he's at 4'5", he's 6'2½", 6'3". Oh, Chris, I don't know if it's going to translate. Well, I tell you what, put the film on and see what he did against USC last year. See what he did against Marvin Harrison Jr. This kid stepped up in big games, and he played well. And I'm talking, as you know, Rick, man, press, man, coverage. Not off man, not cover two, cover three, man coverage. So tell me, Rick, why isn't he getting the love, and who do you have as the top corners coming out in this draft?
Well, you know, I think there's a little bit of hesitancy. Like, 6'3 is almost like too tall. I know we love tall corners, but there's almost like, hey, is he too tall? It's almost like you automatically get labeled to be a safety. Like Dan the Man just mentioned Cooper DeJean, who a lot of people think is a safety because he's a white cornerback. But no, this dude is legit. In fact, he's my number three cornerback on the board. And I think, you know, when it comes to Cooper DeJean, it's been out of sight, out of mind, because he got injured like early, halfway through the season, and hasn't been able to play, hasn't been able to work out. I can guarantee you that he would have the best testing numbers of all these guys if he was able to work out. And so, like, his draft stock is going to take a hit. Here's a guy who might be there sitting at 40, sitting pretty, by the way. And I would do cartwheels for Cooper DeJean, because after Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo and Terrion Arnold from Alabama, those are my top two guys. Mitchell, to me, I mean, the level of talent, mid-major program, I guess, is a little bit hesitancy. Some people might have Arnold over him because of that. But I saw everything I needed to see in terms of size, physicality, speed, okay? Quinyon Mitchell, instincts, reaction. Like, I think he could fit any scheme. Terrion Arnold, I like it. Not as big, right? But really, I think in terms of coverage skills, he might be the best cover guy. And so, like, it's Arnold, Mitchell, Cooper DeJean for me, okay? And then it's like, what's your flavor of the week? Because a guy like Nate Wiggins, one of the fastest guys in the draft, he's only 173 pounds. Right. So I think he's a fringe first-round guy when it comes to size. You know, could he be there for the Giants at 40? I think that would be a good value pick, right? Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama, the other Alabama corner now, who a lot of people thought was the top corner. Like, he could
had
be
him as a top guy, yeah.
Right? And I think that would be a good value pick because, like, you know, Enos Drakestraw, like, I don't know, Forbes, the kid that went to the Commanders, like, he was kind of a rocky road. Similar frame. Is a team going to pull the trigger on a guy? What do I have him? He's 183, okay? But, durability issues. So, you know, I think the cornerbacks are the most variable in terms of X factors, injuries, size concerns, but it's also the deepest. And, again, you've got to find the guy that really fits your system you know, Max Melton to me.
I like him.
Is a really, I had a first round grade on him in the spring. I gotta say, like, my grade has never really changed. To me, Max Melton is a first round talent, and for some reason, I guess because he's like, if you're under 6 feet tall now, they just label you as a slot. But last time I checked, like, Max Melton played 90% of his snaps on the outside.
He's on the outside, yeah.
So, like, can he do it? Absolutely, he can, and he probably will. But like, I don't know why, like, Max Milton, like, the first thing I hear, like, they automatically assume he's a slot guy. Like,
that's because of his size, Rick. It's because of his size. No question about it, Rick. It's because of his size.
And you know, I mean, to me, those are the guys. Kalen Carson from Wake Forest is a guy, again, injured, out of sight, out of mind. But, man, you talk about the body of work. Kalen Carson out of Wake Forest is laid down. Really good-looking corner. Kamari Lassiter, now, there's a guy who's going to slide. Because his 40 now, it varied. Like, he didn't run the 40 at the combine, but at his pro day, they had him anywhere between 4.51 and 4.61 and everywhere in between. Like, his 40 times were all over the place. So Kamari Lassiter, who some people thought would be in the first round mix, I think, you know, he slides to round two or three. How about Mike Samer still? You want a slot corner out of Michigan? Elijah Jones out of Boston College, who I saw. Woo! Remember Rock Ya-Sin out of Temple?
Temple, yeah.
Sure.
This kid, you know, reminded me of Rock Ya-Sin coming out. Not as rocked up, more agile, a little bit leaner frame, but the change of direction, fluid, hips, flip the hips, man. Elijah Jones, I think, is going to really go higher than what people are saying.
Rick, do you think there's any doubt that Cooper DeJean is going to be a corner in this league, or you think they're going to move him to safety?
No, like I had him mocked in my first round. I think, you know, I can't remember if it was before free agency or not. I think it might have been to the Packers, right? And at the time, it was before they signed McKinney. And I said, well, for the Packers, he might actually fit better as a safety, but I think he's a corner. You know, and if he's not a corner, well, hey, you got one heck of a free safety, right? But to me, he's a corner first and foremost, and I'm going to give him every opportunity to prove that because I've seen that.
Right.
You know?
And one last question for me in the corners, my boy Cam Hart, where do you see him going? Second, third round? What do you see it?
You know, I think kind of like Tariq Woolen, where it's like, you know, he checked off all the boxes, but for some reason, I think the height scares some teams. He maybe goes – early round three, I could see him somewhere in that right around 70. I think Tariq Woolen was like 72. Same thing.
All the nickel corners you named, are they upgrades over Cordell Flott and the likes of Darnay Holmes or Nick McCloud?
Yeah, I think so. And Flott, like, I think he's the guy that might get kicked inside. Right? Is he
looking at Flott inside? Yeah.
So I think they need, like, they need some major help at cornerback. You know, Banks is a good complementary piece, but they need more.
Right. So in all these pro days that you're doing, like you're going all over the place. You were just telling us before we went on, everywhere you're traveling.
By the way, I'm sorry to cut you off, Jerry. I got to mention Quantez Stiggers for a second.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Because that's why you're on. Kid, you know, I went out to the East-West Shrine Bowl, and this kid stuck everybody. And if you don't know the story, he had some off-the-field stuff, never attended college. He was floating around the fan-controlled football league. The Toronto Argonauts took a flyer on him. He was the most outstanding rookie of the CFL.
Yeah.
And, you know, he went to the Shrine Bowl and crushed it. He did not get a combine invite. But I think like 28 teams came to his personal pro day. This guy, once round four rolls around, Quantez Stiggers is a starter at the next level. Now, he's not going to get drafted on the first 2 days because scouts are scared to put their reputation on the line or pound the table for this guy. But I witnessed it.
Why?
I was there.
Rick, I'm not familiar with his story. What's his story off the field? What happened?
Oh, well, he had some personal issues. Some hardships at home where he had to stay home and he couldn't go to college. He had to be there for his family. I think there might have been, you know, his father may have been murdered or something to that effect. And it's just a trial and tribulation, right? Okay. And so you have to be 3 years removed from high school to be eligible for the draft. So he didn't play college ball. He had some hardships. He went and played indoor fan-controlled football league. And then, you know, the Toronto Argonauts saw something and brought him up north. So he spent last season in the CFL where he was one of the best corners in the league. And you could see that, like, he was coming off an 18-game season and just locking dudes down at the East-West Shrine Bowl. Like, nobody could shake him.
So it was nothing like, Rick, it was nothing like domestic violence, or was he was getting arrested?
No. It's nothing.
Personal family hardships.
No, he had some issues with his family. He just had to be
okay.
There.
Well, off the field.
Nothing wrong with the kid. The kid's clean.
Okay.
Makes you like him more.
Off the field issues could be anything from,
yeah,
having a kid or two, he had to raise his family, whatever the hell that might happen. That's why I was asking. Okay.
Yeah. Look into it, though, man. What an incredible story. I'm sorry I cut Jerry off.
No. I'd rather – they want to hear you. They don't want to hear me. I was going to ask you, all these pro days you're going to, like, how's the experience? Like, what's jumping out at you? You're going – it seems like you're going to a lot of different schools. What are some of the highlights that you've seen? It could be position, person, experience, whatever.
Well, I think that the NFL draft is a big groupthink box that lacks creativity, that tries to pigeonhole players. And the thing that pisses me off the most, probably from my scouting brethren, and they're not going to appreciate this, but I'm going to say it, is like, I'm so over labeling guys on measurements and just like, hey, like Cam Kitchens, for example, right? It pisses me off to the 10th degree that this guy is going to go in like the second or even third round now. The best safety in the draft, because he ran a 4.65. Now, I'm old enough to remember when 4.65 was actually like a pretty respectable time for a safety. The whole NFL now is going to make the same mistake they made on Kyle Hamilton, right? Because Kyle Hamilton ran a 4.72. How could he play safety in the NFL? Mm-hmm. There's something called FBI, football intelligence, the instincts, right?
Pat Kerwin loves to say that.
It's like, yo, he plays football, right? He might not have the straight line speed. Like somebody mentioned Keon Coleman, right?
Yeah.
And we write this guy off because he has a slow 40-yard dash time. Mm-hmm. And then he goes through the gauntlet and runs 23 miles per hour through the gauntlet drill. Like nobody even comes close to Keon Coleman running through the gauntlet drill. So what would you rather have? A guy that in-game speed can blow through you? Or you want just a guy that can put his hand down because he trained for a 40-yard dash and can run fast in a straight line? Like, Keon Coleman is going to outplay his draft slot now because we label guys with 40-yard dash times. And to me, I don't know. Call me whatever you want. But the combine is outdated. There's all this next gen technology. There's catapult times and miles per hour. I'm not a big advanced stats or analytics guy, but I think the combine needs to evolve where like these guys know what drills are coming. They know what tests are coming. And I think you need to switch it up. I think you need to rotate the drills that you do every year so you don't know exactly what's coming. I think you need to start gauging different barometers of how we gauge speed and all this technology and change of direction and lateral movement. Like there's so many other ways to calculate this stuff. And we're stuck in the Stone Ages. And then I'll tell you another thing, guys, like I got over 200 pro day dates on my calendar. I'm not attending all of those myself, but why do we invite the best 350 guys to Indianapolis and then spend the entire month of March scouting the next 350 guys at 200 different schools? Like the time, energy, effort, the resources, the money, it makes no sense to me. Like the NFL is living in the Stone Ages when it comes to this process.
Interesting.
And hey, they need somebody to wake up and realize like we're going through drastic changes in the football landscape at the collegiate level. And I feel like the NFL needs to adapt and adjust and change. And that's my pedestal. That's my rant.
No, no, it's why I asked.
And that's what I learned is like, you know, it's just a, it's a big group think box that lacks creativity and originality, in my opinion.
So I do want to get to a couple questions from the listeners. Javier Santos, anything on Joe Milton, Rick?
Oh, man, if I'm playing John Elway quarterback or Tecmo football, give me Joe Milton all day. You know, remember Tecmo? You used to run the end of the goal line and throw it 100 yards. That's what Joe Milton is, man. But, you know, like I get it. Like we saw what Anthony Richardson was last year, and that's what we want to make Joe Milton out to be this year. But it's just not there, the decision-making. And I liked what he did last year in relief of Hendon Hooker. I just didn't see it carry over this year. I think the accuracy is a big-time issue. And so, you know, it's a late-round developmental guy that you want to stash on your practice squad and see if the light bulb turns on.
One more before we go back to Chris. From Bill Shannon, Rick, what's your take on Kansas QB Jason Bean?
So my Jason Bean story, I was teaching a agent apprenticeship class, go figure. And so I'm talking to my class, and I've got the bowl game on there with Kansas. And man, this quarterback is just making plays with his arms, making plays with his feet. And I'm trying to lecture the class, and I'll keep watching this Kansas quarterback. And so I made a phone call to our GM after the class, and I was like, man, this Bean kid, man, like maybe we should add him to our neg list. Like this kid can play a little bit. And so I got beat to the punch. Somebody else actually has his rights in the CFL. But I do think he is a CFL quarterback because he's 185 pounds. And so that's a tough sell for NFL teams. If you remember Malik Cunningham coming out last year, right? That kind of the same situation where just like, I don't know if this guy has the frame to be an NFL quarterback, but I like Bean, man. He's just such an athlete. And I think he probably has to play wide receiver. I don't think he can transition to running back. I think he would be viewed as a wide receiver at the NFL, but man, if he ever comes to the CFL, like I think his skill set is suited to be a big time player up north. Absolutely.
I see Kevin McWalter, the XY Xavier Leggett at 47. You have him as a second round grade,
Rick? We're talking to what, number 40 might be a little bit rich.
No, the Giants have 47.
I'd probably go Adonye Mitchell out of Texas if I could there. Leggett is a guy that looks like AJ Brown, but doesn't play like AJ Brown, right? So like he's got the measurements, the size, the testing, and he flashes the ability to do it on occasion, but Leggett is just not consistent enough for me. And I don't know if Jalin Hyatt, his performance was a consistent issue, or if the Giants just didn't know how to use him, right? Because he had that one big game, and then it's like they forgot how to use him. I don't know what the story was, but like they've already got one semi-relatively high draft pick that's inconsistent. I want somebody more consistent if I'm taking a guy that high. So I'd probably go Adonye Mitchell over Leggett. But, you know, if he's there in the third round, then maybe I'm considering them.
Well, Rick, if it's any consolation, Kevin likes your take on the combine and testing. So there you go. It wasn't a
well. It's real talk. I mean, it's common sense, guys. You know, it just takes somebody. You know, this is my 23rd year covering the draft. There's been a lot of evolution and change since I first started, and the fact that the combine hasn't changed in 40 plus years tells me that we're behind on times. I mean, so, it's not a secret, but I wish somebody would do something about it.
So, Dan Mann, I think he joins every live stream. Thanks, Dan. Who's your top
Dan
running
man.
Back? Dan Mann.
It's Travis Benson all day. I mean, right? The Florida State kid, probably two down back, which is why I don't know if you see a running back. Like, I don't know where the Cowboys pick in the second round. That's probably my guess for the first running back off the board, and I think Benson would be a good one for them. I don't think the Giants are really thinking about running back until day three, quite frankly. They could use one, but they only got six picks. So I don't think we're using a day two pick on a running back. But to me, like, Blake Corum would be a perfect complimentary back. Like, Singletary, can he start? Can you get through the season with him as the starter? I guess you can. Blake Corum is a guy that I feel like has a similar skill set to a Saquon Barkley. Could do a little bit of everything. And you can get him probably in the fourth or fifth round. Braylon Allen from Wisconsin didn't run a 40-yard dash this year at the combine or his pro day. So if you want a bigger back, a bruising back on day three, Braylon Allen, who I think is a Jersey dude out of Wisconsin, I like that young man. And then Jalen Wright out of Tennessee, I guess, would be the other guy that I thought looked good at the Senior Bowl. I did get a chance to see Dylan Laube out of New Hampshire. Saw him against Monmouth earlier in the late in the season, and then saw him again at the Holy Cross Pro Day. And there's the guy, I think, on day three. Like, he's a return guy. He went for 258 yards receiving in one game. So he's a Danny Woodhead kind of running back that you can get on day three. So I think, you know, Blake Watson out of Memphis, he was the MVP of the Hula Bowl. He should have been the MVP of the East-West Shrine Bowl. But if you remember, Frank Gore Jr. had that big 80-yard run, so they gave it to Frank Gore Jr. But Blake Watson, who I had a chance to see against Temple late in the season, nobody's talking about this young man. He might be one of the best players not invited to the NFL Combine that gets drafted. And then, you know, I mentioned Monmouth, like Jaden Sheridan, you know, this is an electrifying young man. I'm a big fan of Jaden Sheridan out of Monmouth. He's a change of pace slasher, but I like what he brings to the table, and I'm rooting for that kid. And I'd love to see
him. Could he be your Isaiah Pacheco, the seventh round type deal, Rick?
Well, Pacheco is a thoroughbred. Pacheco had a frame like a grown man. Jaden Sheridan is, I have him, I think, 185 pounds. So he's not as big. He's 5'8", 187. But he did run a 4.45 and a 1.5 10-yard split. So he's got explosiveness. He's got a burst. And he can catch the ball. He can do a little bit of everything. I would compare him to – now, he didn't return kicks. But, like, if you're talking about, like, what his role would be in the offense, he'd be that change of pace, you know, bring in David Meggett for a screen pass or a little scat run, you know, in the offense there type of thing.
Rick, I don't remember how you had Evan Neal. Let's go to the Giants offensive line 1 second. I don't remember how you had Evan Neal graded out a couple of years ago, but I have to ask you, are you a little surprised that he hasn't look like a seventh overall pick?
Oh, well, you know, with all the trials and tribulations the Giants offensive line has had, I don't think anything surprises me at this point. Is it disappointing? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, when you take a guy that high, I think you expect more on your return from investment. And, you know, that year they had a lot of offensive tackles taken very highly. I remember
Aquanu was the other one. Aquanu was picked ahead.
So, and I think there was another guy in the mix there too. From Mississippi State, was it? Was there another guy?
Yeah, the kid on the Seahawks. Seahawks.
Cross.
Charles Cross.
Cross. So I think I had Aquanu, then Neal, and then Cross, if I remember correctly.
Which is how it went, yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, I expected more, but, you know, the Giants have had a lot of issues with continuity. They've changed their offensive identity a lot, but, you know, you just hope that you can develop him. I don't know, like, does he kick inside to guard? Like, if the Giants were to take a tackle, I guess his future is at guard.
It's over, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, his future might still be at guard. We'll see. I mean, they're going to start him at tackle. Joe made that made that known again the other
day. As it stands, right, they have no choice. So,
well, what do you mean as far as Evan?
Well, I guess
they have a choice now.
Yeah. Illuminor can go to Rick.
Illuminor, yeah. Well, you know, I guess you could do that. And I'll tell you, Illuminor coming out, I really liked because, and I had a first round grade on. I think he went first round. He's a guy that played all five. He started at all five offensive line positions in college. So,
he actually played a little center at college, Rick. I don't remember that.
I believe so. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Look. I believe that Evan deserves to start the season camp. I should say OTAs and camp. You know, once he's healthy at tackle. But to me, Rick, this is year three now. And to me, I think it's going to be a short leash. I really do. I think it's going to be a short leash on him because you have Jermaine that could go right there, a right tackle. You know, who he's played pretty decent tackle for Vegas the last few years. You have that guy. I don't think you wait much longer. Like Joe made it known that he's going to be our right tackle. That's true, but I don't know how long he's going to be right tackle. But at the same time, let him get healthy. I think Carmen Brasillo, his offensive line coach, who Jermaine excelled under in Vegas, could make a difference. Look, I think Carmen Brasillo is a guy that will simplify a lot of things. And I could tell you this, Rick. Some of the technique that Bobby Johnson was teaching as far as stunts and loops and twist pickups had people baffled in the building. I could tell you that for a fact. A couple of times when Evan Neal looked like he was lost out there picking up a twist, okay, wasn't all Evan Neal. I could tell you that. Now, I don't believe also that offensive line coach comes in and now you're a seventh overall talent overnight, okay? I also put it on the player. But I think this guy, Priscilla, is going to help him. I do, Rick. And we'll see where that goes from there. But he deserves the chance.
Yeah.
To start at right tackle. He is a seventh overall pick. And I know it hasn't been a good 2 years for Evan. Okay. But I think he does deserve that chance. But I also, like I said, I think it'll be a short leash this year where if he's struggling in training camp, one-on-ones in camp, beginning of the season, I think they will get him out of there.
Yeah. No, I you know, you hope they can coach him up to his potential, because I do think the best, if they can get him to be adequate, I like Illuminor inside with Runyon. To me, ideally, and I like Aaron Stinney. I actually got a chance to know that kid coming out quite extensively. But to me, ideally, like, he's kind of your swing guy on the interior, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, he will be. Yeah.
You know, somebody mentioned three tech defensive tackles too. Just like, I think that could be that Florida State kid, Fisk, right? I think that could be a guy that the Giants target in the second or third rounds, maybe. But I also like somebody mentioned we're sleeping on the Texas boys. I won't talk.
Oh, I love Sweat.
I won't talk about Brooks or Worthy. I like Tavondre Sweat, man.
Dude, I love that. This is another example, Rick, of look at the film.
Oh, my God.
Look at the film.
Well, I'll give you.
Go ahead.
I'm going to tell you something. Tavondre Sweat, straight dominant at the Senior Bowl. Nobody could block that, man.
Rick, I've seen him in games this year in Texas, and he was just destroying people. Destroying people.
This is a mountain mover. Never mind a people mover.
He's a mountain mover. Rick, I know he's huge. Okay, I get it. But, dude, this is another example of what I always say. And you mentioned it, the old Pat Curran expression of FBI, football intelligence. This is what separates organizations at this draft time, okay? And you look at him on film and you say, well, why isn't people talking about him more? Do you see what the hell this kid did at Texas?
Well,
So whoever asked that, I'm sorry, Rick. Whoever asked that question, I'm not sleeping on the Texas boys.
Yeah, Well, they say he's a two-down player, and why do you want to use a first-round pick on a two-down? Well, that's a pretty dominant two-down player to have. And I'll give
you a first-round pick on him. He's not going to be a first-round pick for the Giants, you know.
I'll tell you, you know, who's a blue-chip prospect for me in this draft? Like a top 10 talent?
Yeah.
Jackson Powers Johnson out of Oregon, man. This kid he's phenomenal.
Well, Rick, you know what? That's kind of going to lead me, at least. Jerry, he'll finish this off as we start to wrap this up. But, Rick, that's interesting you said that, because I'm going to ask you, tell me a kid, A, that many people believe is going to be drafted high, that stock is going to drop April 25th. And give me a kid who maybe is projected late first or early second, that stock is going to go much higher on April 25th, that first night.
Well, I think the guy that's going to probably go higher than we think is Graham Barton out of Duke.
You think so?
Right.
Okay.
And, you know, you want to call him a tackle, you want to call him a center, you want to call him a guard. I think he's a top 20 dude, you know. Okay. So I think he's a guy that's probably going to get drafted higher that people don't come seeing, and a guy that people are thinking are going to go high that isn't. I haven't given that a lot of thought. I guess, you know, I guess Brock Bowers would be that guy, right? Because, like, to me, I thought coming into the season, I said, wow, like, he might be a better prospect than Kyle Pitts. And Kyle Pitts, I think, went six.
Something like that, six or seven, yeah.
And then, like, then you see how small Bowers is, right? Like, did you guys see him standing next to Gronkowski? He looked like a midget. Man, he's a hell of a playmaker, but I don't know if he's a top 10 talent. And, like, I know someone mentioned, like, Rodgers doesn't throw to tight ends, but they do need weapons, and the top three receivers will be off the board. If he doesn't go to the Jets at 10, I don't see how he – I think the Colts are at, like, 15.
Yeah.
And they're another team that just needs a playmaker. I think Bowers doesn't get past 15, but I think if you asked anybody – like back in the spring or back in training camp, like if you told someone Brock Bowers would go 15, they would have laughed at you, right? Because like everybody thought he was a top 10 lock.
Yeah,
he's an absolute monster. I mean, he's to me, I just reminded me of Jeremy Shockey. He's just that kind of speed, like that dominant at that level, right? Like I remember seeing Shockey in college, just thinking this is a man among boys. And when you look at film of Bowers, he's incredible. Like we talked about it. If he went six overall to the Giants, if they were going receiver and they took Bowers after seeing,
I wouldn't be mad about it. Yeah, I wouldn't be mad.
No, right, not at all. I mean, he's an absolute monster. I wanted to ask you this one question from Crunch Bunch. Seemed like Giants emphasized speed. No, wait, hang on. He had a different question. The question was about there it is. Sorry about that. Which receiver do you think fits Dable's offense the most? Does it matter when you're talking about the talent level of those three, whether it's Neighbors, Harrison, or Dunze? Like, you know, is there one that fits, you know, Dable's offense better than the other?
Well, I think like when you're talking about wide receiver ones, like you just need, you need a stud, right?
Right.
So like,
right.
I don't think, you know, in terms of like who fits better. Well, maybe Harrison is the complement to some of these speed, like Jalen Hyatt is a
right
straight line speed guy.
Yeah.
Wendell Robinson is kind of that gadget guy.
Slot,
right.
Yeah.
So to me, like Harrison might be that possession move the chains type guy that fits, because you don't want all speed, right? Like you don't want to bring in Xavier Worthy. You've already got that in a way. Right. So to me, like when you get past the first round, well, then like here's an example. I love Ladd McConkey. I don't think he fits the Giants. Right. Like it just doesn't make sense. I love the kid, though, like, but he wouldn't fit. Same thing with like Ricky Pearsall out of Florida. Like, how about Brendan Rice, though, out of USC? Now, there's a guy 6'2", Jerry Rice's son, good route runner. Big catch target radius, like that to me is what the Giants offense needs.
And like to your point, it seems like Keon Coleman's almost a perfect fit for what you're saying, right?
Yeah,
6'4", Keon Coleman, fast enough, you know, good hands over the middle, to compliment
him. Well, now let's talk about that. Like, you have Keon Coleman opposite of Jalin Hyatt, Wendell Robinson in the slot. Like, you know, if you were to go Joe Alt in the first round, Keon Coleman on the come around is not a bad option.
Drew Locke will look great throwing to him.
You know, here's what I'll tell you, man. Drew Locke, I remember, you know, watching the Missouri spring game, and they were talking to Drew Locke, and they were kind of doing like the play-by-play. And I'll tell you what, boy, they said, Drew, what play is coming up? And I mean, this kid, he was 0-for-3. He didn't even know the own play that his own offense was calling. And I wonder if, like, that's why I was like, man, old Drew, he don't know the playbook now. He couldn't tell you what they were calling, what they were running, what they were doing. I said, man, that was kind of an awkward moment. But I wonder, like, if that's been part of his issues at the NFL level. Like, not obviously injuries have been one issue, but, like, you're not able to beat out Geno Smith. Like, I just wonder, like, if he's just, like, not able to pick up the playbook or, like,
he can't read defenses too, bro. He's not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
He's not that dude. And I do think the Giants are going to add a quarterback. Unfortunately, it won't be in the first round. But I do think, you know, whether it's Bo Nix or even a Spencer Rattler, like, they've got to get another dude in there, right? Let's be real. Tommy DeVito, I think, won more games than.
Do you think a Bo Nix or a Spencer Rattler will play over Daniel Jones 2 years from now?
No.
Well, I think he might play this year because Daniel Jones can't stay. Like, is Daniel Jones?
Forget about that. I'm just saying Daniel's healthy.
But he's not.
I know.
But he is going to be healthy next year.
But he's not. Is Daniel Jones going to be ready for week one?
I see Chris's point. Like, I just don't want a guy. I want the Rick. I want the guy. I just don't want a guy. I don't know.
But when Daniel Jones gets hurt, is, like, Drew Locke going to be the guy that you want to really turn to? Because there's an argument to be made.
Of course not. No.
Right. So the argument to be made is, like, the most important position in football is quarterback. Mm-hmm. Some people might say the second most important position in football is the backup quarterback. And to me, it's unsettling right now. It's very unsettling. And I think this season can go sideways in a heartbeat. Should old, you know, that old neck injury flare up, or what's the injury this week for Daniel Jones? Like, if you've only got, and I'm not trying to discredit Tommy DeVito, man, but look, if Drew Locke and Tommy DeVito are your only other options going into the season,
no, we all feel the same way. We feel the same way.
So you've got to add something someone to the
equation. But a Bo Nix or a Spencer Rattler is not going to be an option this year if Daniel.
Well, what are the choices?
It'll be Drew Locke.
Yeah, I mean, with those four, whatever.
It's not going to be Bo Nix or a draft pick in the second or third round that's going to jump in ahead of Drew Locke.
I didn't realize Drew Locke was the
benchmark. I don't see that, but
no.
Look, Rick, what I'm saying is that if they go with a kid in the second or third round, that's a kid they feel is what is going to be their quarterback in a few years. No? They're not drafting a second or third round pick for to be a backup. No?
I don't think they're comfortable with the quarterbacks on the roster.
Rick, there's no question. I've been saying that for months. The quarterback's been in a conversation since January. I'm just saying, as far as drafting a kid like in his second or third round and then saying this is going to be our guy for next year. I don't think you're saying that.
I think what you're saying is I'm giving myself another insurance policy here, because we just talked about, as somebody mentioned in the chat, like, if Drew Locke can't pick up a playbook and can't read a defense,
no, he's not the future.
Well, then maybe, you know what? Then guess what? Maybe Bo Nix in the third round, who started 60 games in college, maybe he is the better backup option. And you know what? Maybe he does outplay Daniel Jones. I don't know. It's possible, but I need another option. Okay. If you go into the season with just these quarterbacks on the roster, it will be an absolute debacle. Mark my words.
Well, that's very possible, bud. There's no question about that. That's very possible.
Jerry? Good stuff. I was going to say, if you don't take the quarterback by the second round, though, then when you're taking him in the third, it's a friggin' crapshoot if I've ever seen one. Like, that's just like, we're hoping he's good. By the third round, especially in the quarterback position that we're in, if you don't take him by the second, if the guys you're saying, Penix, Knicks, okay, I'll stop there. But I'm saying if you're going in the third round, like, all right, well, we'll take this guy and we'll see if he can do it. I just think at that point, you're throwing caution to the wind and you're hoping for the best at that point. That's not your guy in the third round. That's all. But we'll see. Should be interesting.
Well, Rick?
They said that about Dak Prescott once. Like, Spencer Rattler at one point was considered to be the heir apparent to Baker Mayfield and Jalen Hurts.
Yeah,
and
I remember that.
Next big-time Heisman hopeful.
Oh, absolutely. I remember. Yeah.
Like, this dude is one – like, Rattler has rattled off some wins now against – you want to talk about stepping up against some big-time competition, go check – the 2022 last six games of the stretch, I mean, he was knocking out top 25 opponents left and right. I know this year was a little bit of a roller coaster, but when you talk about the traits, what separates, you know, these guys so much from a Spencer Rattler? Like, if you're saying, like, hey, on day three, in the fourth round, if I can get a guy like Spencer Rattler who might be better than Daniel Jones, I don't even know. Like, it's possible. Give me that guy. Give me somebody that offers optimism, because there is none in the quarterback room right now. Right. What I have, and I there's zero faith or optimism or hope. It's going to be a flat line.
Let me address Bill. Bill, yeah. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is those are pleasant surprises. When Brock Purdy was selected, they didn't think he was going to start year one. Tom Brady was not selected in round six, and they thought we've got the guy for the next 20 years. So that was my point. That's all. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, right. Jalen Hurts, nobody expected him to start.
Second round, though. Second round.
Right. They just kind of threw it out there and said, hey, if it hit, great. If it doesn't, it's a second round pick. Yeah, so
right.
It'll
be
beauty of the draft. You know, how these guys have these kids.
But again, like, guys. In the third round, Bo Nix has started 60 games, right?
Like, that's
a guy that could probably come in and pick up a playbook and maybe give you something.
I'm not going to argue that, Rick. No, look, I'm not going to argue that. Yeah, you don't know how these kids are going to turn out, Rick. You're right. Rick, what do you have Bo Nix, by the way? Where do you think he goes? Round-wise.
I think he goes in the third round.
Third round?
All right.
That'd be interesting, man. You see that a lot. Third round, second. I think you see the other day about Denver, you know, Peyton kind of likes him, and it's going to be fascinating, man. You know, it really is.
We're all trying to make these quarterbacks into something they're not. And, like, you know, oh, well, Bo Nix, he's kind of the same size as Drew Brees. Is that why Sean Payton likes him now? I don't know. I think there's going to be a big drop after the big four quarterbacks that everybody's talking about. I think Penix and Nix both slide. I think Penix slides into the second round, and I think Nix slides into the third round, right? And I think, you know, Rattler, say what you want, though. Like, there's a reason why he was the number one quarterback recruit in the nation. If you're saying, hey, on day three, I can roll the dice – mm-hmm. and just, you know, see what happens. Well, that's a guy I want. You know, I need an option that gives me optimism. And Daniel Jones doesn't do it for me. And Drew Lock, I mean, those guys are both injury prone. Okay. And right
forget
now,
about Drew Lock. He's just a backup, Rick. You know, he's just a kid that could come in there. You know,
like, well, if you're saying forget about Drew Lock, well, then my logic is
I'm talking about the future.
Well, you know, I'm a Bill Walsh believer. Like, every year you draft a quarterback, regardless if you have one or not. I don't care what round it is, but every year you should be developing or drafting a quarterback, because if you have too many good quarterbacks, that's a good problem to have, because then you have equity and you could flip good quarterbacks in exchange for draft picks. So you should draft a quarterback, I think, personally, every single year. And the only team that really does that is the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, they do.
Right?
I know.
But, you know, that's the old Bill Walsh philosophy. You draft a quarterback every year. If you remember, they had, you know, from Montana to Bono to Gerback, the list went on and on and on. Steve Young, as you know.
So, Rick, so before we go, Rick, the Giants, do you feel the Giants are going to draft a quarterback in this draft? One way or the other, buddy. Forget about the first round. It could be all six picks.
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. Because you cannot go to bed at night and rest your pillow on a head with the current quarterbacks on the roster. Absolutely, they're going to take a quarterback. Yes.
Or at least not sleep well. Right. Yes.
Interesting. Yeah. Be interesting.
Rick, this is the longest podcast we ever did, and it felt like it was about 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Rick, thank you. Thank you, brother, for giving us your, thank you for giving us your time, buddy. Hour and a half.
There's a Italian restaurant spot I was looking at too down here with the crab cake meat. You know, I'm in Baltimore, DC. You know.
Oh, you where are you in Baltimore?
Yeah, I'm in DC.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there was an Italian restaurant I was looking at over here. That's where I'm headed to next. So
nice. What part of DC? Like
I don't get too many Italian meals on the road, so I found one here. I'm right downtown. I'm literally feet from the White House.
Oh, okay. Northwest, as I think we it speak. Is. Yeah. Nice.
11th Street.
All right.
Do you know it?
I spent a semester in DC interning.
Okay.
Yeah. So I love DC. It's a very cool town.
Big shout out to the chat room, man.
Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah. We got great listeners, and everybody's commenting. It's awesome. And again,
people love you, Rick. People love you, brother.
Oh, Joe.
Some do.
Thanks, man. Hey, it's all about who cares.
I never met anybody that didn't like you, Rick, unless you know something I don't.
Thanks, Rick. Staten Island has some good Italian food if you come up this way,
Kevin. Oh, yeah. Listen, Wagner didn't have a pro day this year, so usually I'm out there on that trip. But
and Rick, I was excited. You said Monmouth. My kid's going to Monmouth in the fall. My daughter, so maybe I can watch some football. And,
very nice. You know,
Division One.
Coach Callahan, by the way,
sort of Division
Kevin
One.
Kevin Callahan, future College Football Hall of Fame head coach in Monmouth. So
nice. Tell everyone where you're at now, Rick, and what you're up to. We didn't even get to that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, you know. I got a lot of things going on and off the field, but, you know, I took a position with the Edmonton Elks as an advanced scout there. So, you know, been learning a lot from, head coach Chris Jones is a four-time Grey Cup champion. Our assistant GM, G-Roy Simon has got a couple Grey Cups on the resume. So, just, you know, trying to be a sponge and bring something to the table there and build something unique. Also doing the allaccessfootball.com. It's kind of what the draft Bible has evolved into. Expanded the coverage to, you know, we're not just talking NFL draft. We kind of cover a lot of football talk, alternate football. If you like the UFL stuff, I'll be talking about some of that. But a lot of draft coverage, obviously, leading up to the draft in April. We'll have all of our positional rankings there. A lot of off-season coverage. So if you like that kind of stuff, it's free newsletter at allaccessfootball.com. And, you know, planning and plotting some pretty big things for the future. Love being here on the show. So, you know, this is tradition, man. I appreciate all the love and support and, you know, talking some Jersey football.
I'm sure you saw Twitter, man, when Jerry put it out this afternoon that you were going to be on tonight.
On fire.
People were loving it, bro. People were loving it. You know?
Man, unbelievable. Well, I was telling you, before you hopped on, Biz, me and Jerry were talking about, like, logistically speaking, like, we've been talking too long. Now we've got to speak it into action. We've got to do a Jersey Shore remote.
Right. Yeah, that would be good. We got to make it happen. Just got to give a week advance notice. That's it.
We'll figure it out. Weeks advance notice. What, are you the president, guy?
We're going to talk to Billy down at Hooks.
Weeks advance notice. Why, one, guy? What, you got meeting with the Secretary of Defense or something?
One week I need. That's it. One
week. Don't hold your breath in that. He owes me about five dinners he never paid up, Rick. He doesn't leave.
He needs advance notice because there's going to be recovery time after that show.
Right. That's right.
Well, Rick, thank you, brother. It's been a pleasure talking to you again, Paisan.
Yeah, a lot
keep
of fun.
Keep in touch, guys. Man. You know, I never hear from you. You never text. You know, you're like this big, busy, big shot.
Oh, and by the way, we gotta call you out because I did text you about this. Rick, Chris saw this. What happened with the unfollow, Rick? What happened? All of a sudden was unfollowing us, and I texted you about it. He said it was his assistant. Talk about Mr. Big Time. That was an issue with my assistant.
Oh, sorry, sir. Yeah. I didn't realize you had an assistant. You might want to fire that assistant.
Here's what happened, guys. I had a new social media coordinator that I hired. It was a part-time temporary thing. We gave it an experiment. We gave it a whirl.
Nice.
Part of their strategy was to unfollow everybody on Twitter. So at some point,
what the hell kind of strategy is that?
That's a shitty strategy.
What the hell kind of strategy is that?
Apparently, there's some kind of something in the algorithm of Twitter. If you have zero followers, if you follow zero and you have a bunch of followers or something, I couldn't keep up with it. Obviously, the social media person is no more. They're no longer here. So I had to follow one by one. That's funny. A true story. Yeah, you guys.
I believe it.
This is what happened. I can't make this stuff up.
No, it's funny.
That's what happened. They unfollowed everybody. So now one by one, I got to refollow everybody and build it back up again.
That's what I said. I said, did we offend you? He's like, no.
I can't be offended, guys. Come on.
All right.
I've never blocked or unfollowed anybody intentionally. Like, if you don't like me, you don't like me. It's all good. I get it.
And folks, how could you not like Rick? I mean, you might disagree with things.
Well,
not like the guy is absolutely awesome. I know people Rick, I can tell you this. If anybody doesn't like you, you ready? This stems from Micah Parsons.
Yes,
I can tell you that right now, Rick.
Yep.
I still get people tweeting at me saying, "Oh, that's the guy who said Micah Parsons had flags on him."
And it also turned into that's the guy that said Micah Parsons sucks. Like it's taken on a life of its own. No, but people will say that. It's just taken on a life of its own.
It's all good. And I knew. And it's funny. We went almost an hour and 40 minutes without a Micah Parsons reference.
Well, people were commenting here. I saw it.
I'm telling you, Rick. Yeah. Give it time. I'll look at the Twitter feed later. I'll see.
We'll be doing it 10 years from now. Hey, they'll be putting Micah Parsons in the Hall of Fame, and we'll be having the call. Yeah, remember? Remember you didn't.
And Rick, thanks for
good. This is a lot of fun, guys.
Thanks for powering through the hotel Wi-Fi. The hotel Wi-Fi. I know that's tough, so thank you for that. I appreciate it. Calling in from the road, that's not easy.
We did some furniture rearrangement. Yeah, just like that. They're giving me the hook. We did some furniture rearrangement.
Go get your chicken palm. Well, yeah, I know you got to be hungry, so go ahead.
Yeah.
Hey, Tommy, where you at?
Nice.
Thanks, guys.
All right, brother.
All right, guys. Good stuff. All right, dude. That was fun, man. Good dude.
Jumping on from whacked the... Rick.
Did you? I know he did it. He hung up.
I was going to
Didn't
even say goodbye to him.
No, I was going to take him out with us, but I think he's having Wi-Fi issues now. But that was good, man. And it's interesting to get a different perspective too, not just the same old, you know?
Absolutely.
Interesting to hear what he had to say about the quarterbacks. Like, that was fascinating. And we're probably going to have somebody else on in a couple weeks that's going to have a different opinion. And you know, look, these guys do the homework. They do the real homework. I mean, Rick's going to all these pro days. And I was going to ask him, like, does he scout differently for the CFL? That would have been cool to hear. Jerry, but,
Jerry, I could tell you probably right now.
Yeah.
The Giants are in their meeting room.
Yeah.
And they could have one guy. You could have Tim McDonald saying, no, I like Daniels. Second best. Let's get Caleb at it. I think that's a foregone.
Yeah, that's going right.
You could have Nick. You could have Chris Rossetti saying, "No, I got JJ." Dable going, "Well, I'm kind of leaning towards Drake." You get what I'm saying?
Yep.
That's the beauty of this. You know, it's this. Everybody's going to have different opinions. Then you see who you know. Everybody talks and works together. But like you said, you know, Rick could have your opinions here. Another guy, we'll have Syverson on soon. He could have his opinions here.
Yeah.
Like Rick wasn't that crazy about
this quarterback class, you could tell. Who knows? Iverson might come in next week. Oh, yeah, I think this is four deep. Excellent guys. Day one starters. You know, right. The whole deal. You don't know. Yeah. I mean, but that doesn't make anybody right or wrong, because, Jerry, the bottom line is what? It's always going to be, we'll see what happens when they're on the field.
Yeah.
But one thing I want to talk to you. I know we're running late here.
No, dude, we can go. Whatever. People said they can't wait to listen.
It's a special podcast, everybody. So we're going to run a little late. So hang with us this week.
Yeah.
You know, I hope I'm not born now, you know, late, running late. But Jerry, one thing that Rick said, and I've been saying this, dude, the FBI, that's straight out of Pat Kerwin's playbook. That means football intelligence. Okay. Where, look, some teams have it, some teams don't.
Yeah,
some teams are enthralled with this speed time and all this stuff.
Yeah,
and other teams would be like, well, that's great, but we're going to watch 19,000 hours of film. We've seen this kid.
What happened? I lost you. How did I not hear you now? Can you hear me?
Jimmy, you hear me?
Yeah, we go. We're good now.
So, you know, like I was saying, some teams are just going to go by their college. Well, I'm not going to worry about the 4-5. They're going to look at it. And, yeah, that's nice. Even this corner is a 4-5. He's 6'3", 6'2". But look what he did against this guy in college. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All playing on Sunday afternoons. But that's the beauty of it, Jerry. That's the beauty of the draft. You know, different opinions. Each organization's got different opinions about certain guys and all that stuff. That's why they're going to be drafted here, second round, first round, third round, and all that stuff. So, and then you see how it plays out, right? And you see.
Yeah.
You see teams that go to the playoffs year after year and they have good drafts like the Ravens and good. And then you see other teams that don't have good drafts year after year. They can't get an offensive line together. They can't this, you know, all that stuff. So we'll see.
What's going to be interesting to see is who's going to trade up and how much are they going to trade up to get their guy. That's the thing that's fascinating every year. Yeah. And you always, whenever it happens, you're always like, man, that's an awful lot to give up. But then when it happens, it's, you know, if that player's successful, you don't care.
Look, one thing I didn't agree with Rick about, he feels they're going to have to give up three number ones at Giants.
No, I don't either.
To move up to four.
No.
I don't believe that. I believe they're going to have to obviously swap ones, give up the 2025 one.
Yeah.
And then maybe a three or two, whatever it might be, a two, next year too. But I don't think they're going to have to give up three number ones.
No, I would think they have to give up the six, because I literally have this scenario playing out, Chris, in the Giants side here this week. So I didn't show you, but I have – going back to your six, next year's one, and a three, this year's three. So I think that's a fair price to move up from six to four.
I don't believe they're going to have to give up three number ones.
I agree.
To move up two spots.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You know, but like we were talking about with Rick, you know, the Vikings, look, they have the two number one picks.
Right.
Okay. They did this for a reason.
Yep.
All right. They got that other extra number one for a reason, because they want to move up.
Mm-hmm.
Now we'll see what happens as far as who they have graded that high, who they're looking to get. And if he's off the board, like I said, Washington could turn around and take a J.J. McCarthy at number two. That could throw a monkey wrench into team's plans. Hey, for all we know, Kevin O'Connell could be sitting there, only has J.J. He knows he's not getting Caleb. So we only have J.J. rated this high. And he goes surprisingly number two, or maybe not surprisingly. And now Kevin O'Connell sits back.
Yeah.
Now, we don't have Daniels rated up there. But, you know. Yeah. We don't know, dude. Yep.
Yeah, we don't know who the person is.
We don't know.
Yep.
Everything is speculation.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So, and there's a lot of smoke this time of year. A lot of smoke. Teams will start leaking. Oh, yeah, we like this guy. Oh, really? You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. Fired up Rick is cool from Javier Santos.
He's got that Paisan blood in him. So.
Real quick, Chris, since we're still going, it's an hour and 45 minutes in. What do you think of the new kickoff rules?
I kind of like it.
It makes it a position again, because it wasn't a position for the last few years.
No, obviously Jerry was boring, right? Everything was out of the end zone. You know,
what was the point, right? And now they're not gunning down the field; they're starting later on down the field. Yeah,
it's wild. I think it's going to be. It's a 1 year kind of like, you know, let's take a look at it type deal. And I think it's pretty. It's going to be important now for later rounds. Guys are going to return kickoffs, so all that stuff. That's going to be back in the game. You see the Steelers jumped all over Cordell Patterson, right? Because he's excellent what he does in returning kicks. You're going to see that now.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to see like a gunner, how important gunner is, or who they're going to, and training camp, you know, somebody else now as a kickoff returner, because it's back in the game. Dude, you don't really want to kick it through the end zone now and start. The other team starts at the 30.
Right.
At first, it was at 35.
Right.
I think they kicked it. I think it's back to the 30.
And then there's a scenario where it's the 40 now too. There's a 40s mentioned in there too. Like if you kick it out of bounds, I forget what it is. It's not just right. out of bounds. There's another. Right. There's a lot of rules to it. Like
right.
I was laughing because I said a kid come out of college when he learns this, he's gonna go. All right, what am I doing? Like I if I'm catching, I'll be like, holy, you got to memorize all the scenarios.
So,
you know.
So I think it's pretty. I think it's gonna be exciting. I really do. I think it's gonna be exciting. You know.
Real quick, Rob Cassis, you're going to be live on the draft. Yes, I'm going to do a live feed. Yes, I will be live. Chris will be doing the work at the stadium, and I will be doing a live feed. Absolutely. Can't wait for that. We'll see what's – that way you can see what's true and what's not and all the rumors, and it should be
a fun time. Don't worry, Rob. Your Lightning will be out of the playoffs by now, so you won't have to worry about watching him on TV.
Dropping fast. Are they in the – I think they're in the seventh spot. So, they'll be – oh, you mean out of the play? They'll be eliminated by then. Yes.
They'll be eliminated by then.
Yeah. So good stuff.
All right, brother.
Yeah, good time, man.
Good stuff. Thank you, Rick, again. I'm glad. Hopefully, everybody liked it, and maybe Cyber's in next week, right? We'll see what happens. We, you know, might have a couple of guests. I'm trying to work on things. A lot of people have busy schedules. This time
working the phones.
So we're working the phones, folks.
Working the phones, baby. All right, guys. Sundays are Giant Days. Take care, everyone.
Bye, bye, everybody.